You're listening to In the Money, your source for information on personal finance, investing, real estate, and financial planning. And now, your host for In the Money, Todd Ganos.
Welcome to In the Money, your personal finance podcast. I'm Todd Ganos of Doolittle & Ganos Investment Counsel. We'd like to thank all of our listeners who've made the transition from our weekly radio show to our podcast. As always, we'll be talking about a range of subjects that affect your financial life. But before we get into those topics for today, let's see what's been in the news recently. With the release of the Gross Domestic Product Report by the U.S. Department of Commerce, we find that consumer spending in the fourth calendar quarter grew by a very robust rate of almost 4.4% annualized rate. Also, this rate of consumer spending is now at an all-time high, and when we sort of break it down into durable goods, non-durable goods, and so forth, we actually find we're at a peak. Now, this might be because there's been a two-year pent-up or delay of holiday shopping, but it did come on in very strong force in the fourth quarter. But it also might be an indicator that consumers feel a little more comfortable about their finances and employment circumstances. The specific retail sales component has consistently remained about 3% plus or minus over year-ago levels. It's important to note, though, that what people are spending their money on has changed, particularly like, you know, autos and travel are down. On the business front, there's several indicators, indexes that the government and industry tracks. One is the Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Index, and then also their Services Index. And these are measured both at a national level and a regional level. And when we look at these two indicators, manufacturing and services, have been consistently pointing towards economic growth. And when we actually look at specific regions of the country, Chicago is on fire. And we don't mean that Mrs. O'Leary's cow has kicked over the kerosene lantern. Chicago, for whatever reason, in the upper Midwest, manufacturing and services are just growing at a real rapid pace. When we turn to, say, New York and the Mid-Atlantic regions, they're growing nicely, but not quite as hot as in the Chicago area. But nonetheless, it's still robust growth. And so this tells us that business conditions are actually improving quite a bit. When we look at an indicator of small business owner sentiment, we see that has been consistently moving up, although, in all fairness, not as strongly as it was, say, at the peak in, say, around 2007. Now, with regard to real estate, in spite of the June 2010 expiration of the federal home buyer tax credit, home purchase applications have steadily increased over the past 7 months, and this has been a real surprise for us. Of the past, call it 30 weekly reports from the Mortgage Bankers Association, roughly 25 of those actually showed increases, and we would estimate that the number of home purchase applications has actually increased by maybe about 50% or so over the past 6 or 7 months. And the number of homes in escrow have increased substantially. Now, the prices paid for these homes has moved up over the past 18 months by about 6 to 8%. There are some home price indexes that suggest, oh, things are still going down. But we do believe that there is a statistical skew in those indexes. Another thing that we can see is that rent being paid by apartment dwellers has been increasing. Now, the interesting thing is it's not because landlords are bumping up rent. It's because people are upscaling their specific apartments. They're moving into nicer dwellings. And so our sense is the, you know, why is this? Is that people are feeling a little more comfortable about their income and employment situation. Okay, so now let's turn to employment. We've noticed for several months, those who've listened to our radio show, that there's been this disparity between employment reports that have been issued by the private sector and those that have been issued by the federal government. The private sector reports have been at non-recessionary levels for, you know, we'll say about almost a year. Now, the federal government reports have, for example, with initial jobless claims, for about the past 12 months, they've actually remained higher, about 100,000 initial jobless claims per week higher. And this sort of confused us, befuddled us, why these initial jobless claims were remaining higher. And by about the August-September timeframe, we kind of got a glimpse of why this was occurring. Well, as it turns out, state and local governments have been in a downsizing mode. And I think it's no secret that state and local governments have had their challenges with tax revenues and balancing their own budgets. But what really became clear at the end of the summer of 2010 was where these extra initial jobless claims were coming from were from state and local government downsizing. Well, the good news is that by early fall of 2010, we actually saw initial jobless claims begin to drop, in part because retailers were gearing up for a holiday shopping season. But we also saw that the private sector was picking up the slack of the public sector job cuts. Then in January, of course, we saw an expected spike in initial jobless claims because the retailers didn't need those same set of folks for holiday shopping season being over. Okay, but by the end of January, we did see this drop in initial jobless claims resuming. Now, the good news is that continuing jobless claims continue to fall, and the average duration of employment is getting shorter. Now, some people might say, oh, well, they're just sort of falling off the back end of the benefits period. Well, what we – now, that might be a good argument, but remember that the federal government has these extended and emergency benefits that kick in after normal jobless benefits are discontinued. And so what we're not seeing is an increase or a change in applications for the extended and emergency benefits. So as individuals are falling off the back end of regular jobless benefits, they are not applying for these extended and emergency benefits. What we're really seeing is the reason why they're coming off the unemployment benefits rolls is because they are getting jobs. In the most recent employment situation report from the U.S. Department of Labor, we find that the unemployment rate came down, and that's good, down to 9.0. Now, we got a long way to go, but this report also highlights the disparity of these government numbers, because the unemployment rate, the 9.0% that comes out, is actually a much more complete view of what's going on in the job market. Whereas the job gain number, that is also a headline number that gets reported, that is a much more narrow view, and it does not include self-employed individuals and certain small businesses, and it really just tends to focus on large business and government. So we do see that this disparity exists even within the government's own data. Okay. Well, that's sort of an overview of what's been going on in the economy over the past month or several months. We'll be back after a brief break. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the backside of the break.
You're listening to In the Money, your source for information on personal finance, investing, real estate, and financial planning.
Welcome back to In the Money. We're joined now by Jerry Madigan and Arena Mulvey, both portfolio managers at our firm. So, Arena, let's talk about the economy a little bit. Last year, the prophets of doom were calling for a double-dip recession in the United States.
Well, the economic growth in the United States did hit a soft patch in 2010, more specifically in June. However, since then, it has picked up.
Well, what would you say has contributed to this pickup?
Actually, we have seen a consistent strengthening in both consumer spending and manufacturing. Indeed, consumer spending is above its pre-crisis peak. And that is the case not only with durable goods, but also non-durable and services as well. That being said, consumers have shifted in what they are buying. Consumers are clearly spending less on autos and travel. As for manufacturing, our nationwide numbers would suggest that our economy is pretty healthy.
So what's the challenge then with the U.S. economy right now?
The challenge right now is employment. It appears as though the private sector has begun to hire again.
Mm-hmm.
The November elections likely gave businesses a better sense of the costs associated with bringing new employees on board. However, as state and local governments deal with their own fiscal challenges, mm-hmm. we find that they are downsizing. In spite of this, it appears that the duration of unemployment is shortening.
So Jerry, you're our world traveler here. Anyone who's listened to In the Money on the radio knows that you've called in from all over the place. You've seen firsthand what's been going on in other economies. So what is going on overseas?
Well, I mean, there's really a difference between, at least during the recession especially, it was very stark. There's a difference between the developed world and the developing world. And as I said, I was in both Asia and Latin America during the height of the recession, and you would not have known that a financial meltdown was taking place in these economies. The restaurants were full, tour buses were jamming, hotels were full. People are out in the streets living life.
And how about real estate?
Yeah, and real estate development continued. There's development after development. Construction, real demand in these economies. Minimum down payments are 30%. So there was no financial shenanigans going on or easy credit. You had to be credit worthy, and there had to be demand, and it continues to this day.
How about the national debt in some of these countries?
Yeah, in general, most of the developing world has done a very good job in managing their fiscal houses. Their debt levels, on average, are around 30 to 40% of GDP, where most of the developed world is running closer to 90 and 100% of GDP.
So how has this this difference between the developed and the developing economies manifested itself?
Well, the developing world is in the process of building out their infrastructure to industrialize, and that's resulted in demand for basic materials, and that's resulted in higher commodity prices almost across the board. And this is causing wholesale level inflation in many countries, even here in the U.S., and it's causing consumer inflation in many of the regions where groceries are a bigger percent of the consumer spend.
So why aren't we seeing consumer level inflation here in the United States?
Well, we actually are to an extent. As I just mentioned, in the price of food, on average, food costs rose by about 5.5% in 2010. But the way that the inflation index is being calculated has changed over the last 3 years. And had we used the older methodology, inflation would be running a little over 4% today.
Okay. Well, let's turn to the markets arena. How would you characterize January's equity market action?
The S&P index climbed 2.37% in January, a strong mm-hmm. performance. It was led by the energy, technology, financials, and industrial sectors. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, telecom and consumer staples detracted from performance. The earnings season is also in full swing at the moment, and thus far, 69% of companies have reported positive surprises. And,
well, that's good.
Yeah, and only another 8% reported 0% surprises. So overall, the news is pretty good.
Pretty positive. Well, that's good. So, Jerry, recently analysts have commented about municipal bonds, and for the past few months, they've been under quite a bit of pressure. What are your thoughts about bonds?
Well, munis in particular are the province of the retail investor. 70% of munis are owned by retail investors. So what we've seen really is a perfect storm here, with rates going up about 1 percentage point back in October. They started spiking. And then there was talk about the legislation that states would be able to file for bankruptcy. So we had a couple things working there that caused investors to shoot first and ask questions later. But if you back up and look at the fundamentals in the muni market, so we know on the fiscal side that we see it in the unemployment numbers, and Arena mentioned it earlier, that states and local governments are trimming their expenses, and they're cutting staff, and services are beginning to get cut. Revenues at the state and local levels are largely tied to sales tax, and we've seen an increase 4 consecutive quarters in government coffers. So then if you look at what debt service payments are, they're really a small percentage of their overall expenditures, 3% on average.
So the likelihood of any state really defaulting is probably low?
I'd say it's very low. And
What's history tell us?
History tells us less than one half of 1% is the historical default rate. In 2009, we saw about a 0.5% default rate. Through 2009 and 2010. And there's a reason to believe that that's going to modify going forward if you look at the cost cutting that's taken place, mm-hmm. and revenues are largely driven by the consumer, and the consumer has been pronounced dead many times in my career, and it just doesn't happen in the U.S.
Yeah. So now, certainly, there's cases when a municipal bond issuer defaults, and you're kind of out of luck, but. But is that always the case? Has there been any like pattern of recovery if a bond issuer defaults?
Sure. Even when there is a default, the recovery rates on average have been 70 cents on the dollar. So even in the worst case scenario, if you get a default, you're going to get 70 cents on your dollar back at some point in time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always going to be the case, like, there was up in Washington State, there was a power system that was ultimately called Whoops, that everyone, they pretty much lost everything, and the project couldn't be. But yeah, certainly those are going to happen, but it sort of sounds like there's at least some level of recovery when there is a municipal default.
Indeed. And if you look at the rates on a relative basis, relative to other government instruments or even in the private sector, they're at historically high levels.
Okay. Well, thank you both for joining us today for this recap of the economy and the markets. Until next time, we hope that all of your financial decisions are in the money.